Today's episode is brought to you by Cured Rise. This is a CBD-infused nootropic supplement that has been very carefully crafted with all natural ingredients that all work synergistically to sustain focus and wakefulness while combating the stressors of daily life. I first was shared Rise by a Runga guest and thought it would be just like a lot of the other nootropics and things that I'm shared with, honestly, because people know my background with concussion and TBI. And so I get shared on, I suspect, all of them, all of the nootropics out there. And I thought this one would end up again, just kind of in the top of the stack, and I might not come back to it. But I decided to take it one day, and I immediately felt the difference with Rise. And when I dove into it, I could really unravel the incredible attention to detail that Cured has taken to this formula. And sure enough, when I spoke with the founder, I heard about the clinical herbalist who took over a year to formulate this final product, which blends functional mushrooms, cannabinoids, and adaptogens into the perfect dosages for enhanced cognitive and exercise performance without any of the jitters or things that would come with like an extra cup of coffee. So if you are in need of a boost without a crash, give Rise a try over at coachjoedi.com/cured and use code STACKED to save 10% on Cured Rise.
When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious shit.
And that is the story of human progress.
1 inch at a time.
I'm your host, Joe DiStefano, and you're listening to Stack. Hey guys, what's happening? I'm psyched to be sharing this time with you again. What's happening? Hey, we're going to be back to interviews next week, which I'm super stoked about. Got some great ones lined up. Want to do one more kind of AMA before we embark back on the interview circuit here on this podcast. And I've just got a couple questions that have been coming through on Instagram that I wanted to field on the podcast, because I think there's a lot of people right now that are diving into new programs. And hey, of course, if there's ever anything I can offer you guys in terms of helping you improve your performance, get out of some pain, make things a little bit easier on you, well, hey, hell, isn't that why I'm here? Before we dive in, one question I have gotten a couple times, so I got to field it on the podcast, is which trigger grill I use, because I'm always sharing on Instagram everything I'm cooking. Honestly, I pretty much cook on my trigger grill every single night, and sometimes I'm grilling, sometimes I'm smoking, sometimes I'm baking. It really doesn't matter. In fact, you guys know, if you're a regular listener to this podcast, my wife's predominantly vegan, and we'll basically bake her, like these mushrooms and all sorts of amazing, you know, fruits and vegetables out there. And it's just unbelievable. You can really replace your oven in a lot of cases with a Traeger grill. The things are amazing. And in answer to the question, I have an Ironwood 885. That means there's 885 square inches of cooking real estate. And honestly, that's probably more than I actually need. I think I went a little overboard when I got my Traeger grill. I probably could have gotten away with the Ironwood 650, which is a little bit smaller, which means a little bit less grill to clean. And I think most families of three or four, that's probably going to be fine, even a family of five. The Ironwood 885 is just, if you're cooking, you know, big, you know, sheets or whatever the term is of brisket, or you're doing like multiple racks of ribs, things like that, or you're, you know, cooking for large numbers of people, then the 885 is also perfect. But because you asked, I'm giving you the most honest response I possibly can. And right now, you guys can get 0% financing over at Traeger.com/stacked. That's Traeger.com/stacked. I just went on there, and they have some special meat sweatpants right now as well, which are limited edition. So maybe check those out while you're over there if you're really looking to upgrade your cooking and your meat experience. So, all right, guys. Now, as we kind of dive in here, I really wanted to focus on a low back question I got around mobility. How to incorporate heavy lifting into marathon training, which is a great question, something I've been dealing with, or I have dealt with a lot, especially in my past life. And many of you don't know, I've actually got a marathon training plan now on my website, both a beginner program and a more advanced marathon training program. So if you guys are looking to go from, you know, couch to 5K, we've got a program for that. And then if you're looking to take that fitness from 5K to, say, a marathon, got you covered there too. So you can check those out, which of course are going to more or less take all the guesswork out of this podcast answer. And the last one I wanted to get to was alternative exercises to the Turkish getup, because you guys know I love the getup. I think it's an amazing exercise. I've seen on Instagram lately some people hating on the getup, which, you know, I don't get too emotional over it, but I think it is silly to try to take away any credence from the getup, because I believe if 99% of the population did more getups, 99% of the population would see an improvement in their health and their movement and their strength. So why pick apart like the one thing you'd want to change, right? So I do think it's an amazing exercise. So yeah, guys, so let's dive in. You know, I think that in terms of mobility for lower back pain, of course, you know, I have to kind of start by saying that every case of back pain is different. You know, in most cases, people are either going to have pain when they're sitting or pain when they're standing, right? So there's two different types of back pain. One of them is more flexion intolerant, and one of them is more extension intolerant. And those are going to have different types of treatments, right? And sometimes there's going to be contraindications. So something that might be good for one person's pain might make another person's pain worse. So I'm going to try to give a more general response here and say that if you're in severe back pain, you know, you got to get into a good doc. You know, you could also listen to some previous episodes. You know, of course, I've done two shows with Dr. Stuart McGill, who I don't know if it's I think he's Tiger Woods' back doctor, honestly. He didn't say it on the show, but, you know, I kind of read between the lines. And if you do that, you know, he knows his stuff. He's pretty much the world's foremost expert on the spine. And I've got two podcasts with him we can link to over in the show notes over at coachjoedi.com/ what is this, 178? 178, guys, is that right? I think so. We'll link over in the show notes to those. Also, Dr. Perry Nicholson, I've got a podcast with, and we dive into some back pain stuff. So that would be another one that I would highly recommend listening to if you're in some pain. I've also got a show with Eric Cressy, but I could go on and on, right? But yeah, if you're in severe pain, you know, you got to get checked out and you got to get your individual case looked at. Now, for people that are just like, you know, spending a little too much time at their desk, not maybe moving enough, not getting enough of that low-level physical activity into their day, you know, they've got a little bit of stiffness, you know, this is, you know, wheelhouse for the podcast. And so what I would say is number one is we need that low-level physical activity. So, you know, sometimes like if our back's getting a little bit stiff, you know, we have to look at like, well, what's wrong with this equation? And in most cases, people are either not taking enough steps throughout the day or their mattress sucks, right? You know, so we gotta remove those two things, because, you know, even if you incorporate a 45-minute stretching routine or, you know, an hour of mobility work, it's like if the mattress is shot and you're not taking, you know, at least 4,000 or 5,000 steps a day, then, you know, that low back, core, breath, everything is going to kind of be coming unraveled all the time. And you're basically getting, you know, as mobile as you can between dysfunctional activities. So check those two things out first. You know, 4,000 steps a day is like the absolute minimum. Of course, you know, I like 10,000, which is basically 3 walks a day. You know, so like after any morning calories, go on a little walk, or before any morning calories, an evening walk, and then at some point in the middle of the day, get out and walk. And if you do that, you know, it doesn't have to be a super long walk, but most people that do 3 short walks a day, they're going to hit that 10,000 number when it's combined with all the steps they take in their daily life, in the office or around their house or whatever. So hit those walks. That's also an amazing way to lose weight, to regulate your blood glucose. You know, people that do that are going to really tend to have better body composition just because their body is working a little bit more effectively and efficiently. So get those things in. Next, let's look at the shoes we're wearing. Okay, so we've talked a lot on this podcast about the influence of the lower leg, and so I won't kind of go into it too much, but if your feet are in constricted shoes, I've had a lot of guys lately that I've been working with for years, especially the last 2 years, and suddenly they went back to work and they started to get knee pain and back pain. And you want to know why? Because COVID's more or less kind of over and we all put our dress shoes back on. It's amazing. So if you have new back pain, new knee pain, and you just went back to the office for the first time in 2 years, you also got to look at your footwear. Did you go from no shoes to dress shoes and, or no shoes to, you know, gym shoes when you used to work out over the last 2 years in the garage with no shoes on? That's the other big thing. And so if you're getting some pain, look at those shoes, try to stay out of any shoes that are stiff, narrow, have a large heel to toe differential. Like anything over like 4 to 5 millimeters is too much. And get rid of them. You know, try to get into some Vivo barefoot shoes or something like that. Or, you know, if you must wear dress shoes at work, you know, just like walk in the door with them and then like kick them off as soon as you're in your office and then only put them on. You know, believe me, I worked in an office for a couple of years way back about 10 years ago when I was managing the franchise and I had to wear dress shoes. So obviously I got the most, you know, minimalist and wide toe box shoes I could. But honestly, like I would just get into my office, kick them off, and then just like anytime I had to like leave to go to a meeting or something, put them on again. So minimize the amount of time spent in those shoes. And then in terms of finally getting to mobility exercises, start at the ground up. As I've talked about, you know, the big toe can be a real linchpin. The ankle can be a real linchpin. So making sure those two things are really, 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 really mobile. Simple knee breaks are the easiest way to mobilize your feet and ankles. And what that means is basically putting your balls of your feet up on some sort of book or a board, anything that'll lift them about an inch, leave the heels on the floor. So you have this sort of like reverse high heel going, your feet are together, and then you just start doing some squats. And your squat is going to be severely restricted because of that reverse dorsiflexion that dorsiflexion that you're putting into your feet. That's basically removing your body's ability to get into any dorsiflexion in the squat because it's already in its more or less end range at the ankle. So your squat is going to be severely limited. It's going to seem like more of a hip dominant thing, but it's going to really mobilize that ankle and add a lot of length to the calf in a really dynamic and stable way. So knee breaks, I'll find a video and put it in the show notes over at coachjodi.com/178. That's number one. And you could also hit, you know, some adductor stuff and hamstring stuff. You know, of course, if your hamstrings are super tight or your adductors are super tight, any of these, you know, big muscle groups in the lower body can contribute. But by and large, hit the ankles and the feet and then go right into some like hip activation core work like bird dogs. Bird dogs are absolutely incredible. That's when you're on hands and knees and you're lifting opposite arm and leg and holding up for about 10 seconds. Bird dogs are incredible for mobility. They're also incredible for stability, and they really activate the glute a lot because your inflection, say, on that left leg and that right leg kicks up and you get into that fully extended position. So they're really good for that. And then, of course, you have the rotational element when opposite arm and leg are up. So really good for core stability if that's a deficit. And as you get kind of those bird dogs under your belt and you're doing, say, 10 per side, each with a 10-second hold, start building a little bit strength in that activity, then you can actually flip over and do it as a dead bug, which is when you're lying on your back doing the exact same exercise. So you're on your back, knees and hips are both bent at 90 degrees, arms are straight up in the air, 90 degrees at the torso, and you're doing the same opposite arm and leg activity, but it's a little bit harder because you're on your back, right? And so you have to keep that back really stable as you're doing your dead bugs. And I've got video for this, but you can find it on YouTube as well. But tell you what, head over to the show notes and click the video that I share with you because there's probably a lot of bad dead bug videos on the interwebs. So as you're getting good at bird dogs, go into dead bugs. And then from there, you know, it's going to get a little bit individual, but, you know, things like some people need hip flexor activation. So a lot of times we think of hip flexors as being always too short and too tight and the source of the problem, but sometimes they're really weak. And what we're feeling is just sort of their own weakness. And it's like a little like panic going on. And so a lot of people get a lot of relief from actually doing some hip flexor activation stuff, which is like, you know, like lying on your back and just flexing your knee and using little mini bands and things like that. So some isometric hip flexor work, some bridges with a knee hug. So lying on your back, hugging your knee and doing a one leg glute bridge as you hug that opposite knee to your chest is really good. So you could do like 10 of those on each side. I really like reverse crunches, but not like, you know, how some people do them at the gym. What I really like to use is a kettlebell overhead and put a foam roller behind the calves. So it's like sandwiched. The foam roller is between the calves and the hamstrings. And so that keeps your legs from like extending and turning it into a more ballistic exercise. And then you've got a kettlebell over your head and you want to use the lightest kettlebell you can. So in other words, a lot of times people will use like a bench at the gym or like the leg of the dumbbell rack. Well, that's just, you know, immobile. And so you're getting an unlimited amount of support to help you with the reverse crunch, which means you can take away a lot of the ab work. But when you're using a lighter kettlebell, so you might start with like 20 kilos just to get going on this. And then your goal would be, okay, I want to drop to 18 or even 16, and then I want to drop to 14 or even 12 or 10 or 8. And the lighter the kettlebell gets that you're holding over your head that's on the floor as you're doing the reverse crunch with the roller tucked behind your knees, the more ab activity you get. And that ab activity can be really good for the back if part of the problem is weakness in the abs in that kind of more global muscle strength realm. And last, you know, the thing I should have named first is breath work as well. So a lot of times low back pain, you know, I've talked about this before, but low back pain can also just be due to dysfunctional breathing. And so if our torso isn't getting expanded with each breath, I've talked about how, you know, with a proper breath, a full diaphragmatic breath, our kidneys will actually move a matter of centimeters. So the adrenal glands sit on top of the kidneys, and with a proper breath, with proper expansion, like a little baby breathes, you're going to move those things, those glands, like 2 to 3 centimeters. And that's like a little bit of a massage for your adrenals, and it helps move water throughout the viscera and throughout the torso and throughout the body to keep it kind of active and healthy and supple. But when all of our breath is in our chest, we're not getting that expansion. That's bad news bears for the lower back. So work on breathing drills and really expanding. Start with belly breathing and then try to breathe into your back as well. And a cool way to do this is you can actually kind of get yourself into a cannonball position if you want. And that'll basically, you know, you could just be sitting on the floor or even lying on the floor, grab your knees with your arms and just breathe. And when the knees are in the chest, well, the chest can't rise and the belly can't rise, right? So that helps force the air into that lower back, which can help bring some of that kind of hydration and movement into those areas that might otherwise not be getting much love and might be getting a little bit stiff. So that's your podcast low back treatment protocol. I think I covered everything: mattress, walking, feet, ankles, toes, bird dogs, dead bugs, hip flexors, knee hug bridges, reverse crunches. And then from there, guys, you know, also I would say, like, you know, if your back is bothering you a little bit, probably don't jump right into like the 300 swing workout, right? So focus on things like goblet squats, which are incredible for intra-abdominal pressure, presses. I love rear foot elevated split squats for just about everybody. You know, I was thinking today, I was like, man, if the world basically did rear foot elevated split squats, strict military presses, and glute bridges, and then maybe some push-ups and stuff, sure. But like those three exercises, the glute bridge, the rear foot elevated split squat, and the overhead kettlebell press, it's a program that, like, again, and, you know, maybe not 99%, but a lot of the population could handle. And if they did it literally every single day, so, you know, you'd vary the load, vary the reps, vary the intensity, vary the duration. You know, if you just hit those three exercises all the time, I think we'd really see some gains. So sometimes you try to reinvent the wheel and do a whole bunch of exercises and, you know, give simple problems really complicated solutions when we don't have to. So I just really like those exercises in terms of the strength conditioning approach for somebody with some lower back pain. I would say like hip thrusts, glute bridges, either using a bench, or I really love the hip thrust machine I have. I shared on Instagram recently. Rear foot elevated split squats to kind of get that single leg strength, that knee dominant strength, but also even out the body. And then the overhead press, because when you're doing it heavy, especially if it's only, you know, loaded on one side as it should be most of the time, you're really activating the entire body. So when I'm going to press a kettlebell over my head and it's in the rack position on my chest, before I press, you know, I'm tightening my quads, I'm tightening my glutes, I'm tightening my abs, I'm bracing with a breath, and then I'm driving this thing straight up over my head. And so when you look at that, my whole body is full of tension, and I'm using my breath at just the right time. I'm activating all of these stability muscles, and I have a heavy weight over my head, which is, of course, lengthening that, you know, that fulcrum, I guess, you know, that lever arm. And so my core and my back have to be really active with that bell over my head. And so when you do just, you know, a bunch of sets of really low reps, even if it's sub-maximal, you know, I really love, like, you know, setting a timer, say, you know, 5 minutes or 6 minutes or 7 minutes, and using a weight that's reasonably heavy, and just how many times can I do this really, really, really well in a 6 minute period? You know, and so what you tend to do is like, you know, you'll do two and you could probably do like nine in a row or eight in a row if you really pushed it, but you're only going to do two and then you're going to do the other side. You're going to do two there. Then you're going to shake it out for a second, do three and shake it out and do three on the other side. And maybe you'll do five and then you'll go back to set to two. And so you're always keeping it sub-maximal, but every rep is, you know, has a lot of intent behind it. That's a really good way to use that exercise. And you could really do that with any exercise, but it works especially well with the press. So yeah, you know, I think the other thing, I guess, with low back pain, and then I'll wrap this up, is, you know, you want to make sure you're removing not only the mattress and the lack of steps, but any exercises that might be contributing. So if you're doing, you know, millions of swings, or if you're doing, you know, cleans with a barbell, or, you know, any Olympic lifts or high rep snatches with a kettlebell, or, you know, loads of other stuff, even kipping pull-ups, something like that, that's rather ballistic. You know, you just want to kind of get rid of all that and go back to a more simple program. All right. Now, getting right into it, how do we incorporate heavy lifting into marathon training? This is a great question and something that I've dealt with on this podcast before, but it was probably so long ago. But it's a really important question because it's easy to fatigue yourself. I was just kind of consulting with a person the other day who's practicing to run a marathon. And, you know, she was just telling me, you know, what she was up to. And it was just like, good gosh, she's, you know, too much. You know, sometimes when we want to run a marathon, it's like, you know, we get so motivated that, you know, we don't miss a day in the gym for the weights. We don't miss a run on the street. You know, we're trying to also work on our diet, which means a lot of times people under eat when they start training for marathons because they don't realize how many calories they are, you know, expending during the exercise, or that they need to recover from the exercise. And maybe there's a body composition goal going along with the marathon, which is really common. And so there's a lot of things that are going on in terms of marathon training that we need to kind of weigh against each other. So number one, anybody just in general that's training for a marathon, quit intermittent fasting. Quit intermittent fasting while you're focusing on fitness as your priority. Because, you know, when you're counting minutes and hours between meals and things, when your body is in a state of pretty much constant recovery, if you're on a traditional marathon training program, you know, it's just not going to work well. So ditch the intermittent fasting program, focus on your fitness, you know, be really, you know, cautious with unhealthy calories, you know, focus on getting enough calories of the good stuff. You know, a lot of times people that are training for marathons, if they're doing a conventional program where there's a lot of mileage, you're going to need the, you know, the oats, you're going to need the quinoa, it's just the way it is, white rice, whatever you need. You know, a lot of times, you know, people are going to need those carbs. But I think nowadays, like with the primal paleo approach, and we're all loving the carnivore diet, we're starting to get rid of those things. But when you start marathon training, you know, it's just in most people's best interest. I'm not saying it's impossible to run a marathon on a low carb diet or anything like that. But most people that are running marathons for recreational fitness that have a job, you know, you're going to need some of those carbs. And so just, you know, if you need to weigh them out, if you need to measure them out, you want to decide how many calories you need, you know, do so and make sure you're not eating more than you need. But, you know, make sure you're prioritizing those calories because that's your recovery. And then apart from that, when we look at marathon training, you know, most people need to assess what their priorities really are. So in other words, if you've run 10 marathons before and you've been injured for the last bunch of years or, you know, last couple of months, then you might need to focus more on strength and, you know, evening out your body or repairing, you know, imbalances and things than a person that has never run a marathon but spent the last 10 years, you know, lifting weights in the gym. So if our priority is endurance, like the second person I just kind of described, then no weight training workout should interfere from a recovery standpoint with our really important running or interval or long run sessions. If we are a seasoned runner that is trying to run a stronger race, then depending on the phase of training, strength might be a priority, which means we might not mind going into a run a little bit sore, because we know our priority is actually the strength. So it's good to figure out who you are, what you are, and where you need to focus on. And whatever you decide your priority is, then you should make sure that you never do the other type of workout to the extent that it fatigues and impacts your ability to get the most out of the session at hand. And so this is why I've got an article on my website called the easiest or the safest marathon training plan ever written. And it involves my idea of basically walking your expected finish time every 2 weeks. And so the way I love people to use this program, and it's not a program if you're trying to win a marathon, but it's a program if you want to survive one and be at work on Monday morning. And the program is to walk your estimated finish time. So let's say it's 4 hours and 25 minutes. If your finish time, estimated finish time that you suspect you'll be able to finish your marathon in is say 4.5 hours, then every 2 weeks you are going to walk 4.5 hours. And over the course of 3 to 6 months, you're going to run a larger and larger percentage of that 4.5 hours. And so you're prioritizing the amount of time you're going to need to be on your feet more than the mileage that you're going to have to cover. And it seems to work really, really, really well for most people that have tried it, including myself with the ultra I ran in Hawaii a bunch of years ago. That was like 35 miles. So, back to the question, how to incorporate heavy lifting and marathon training. So hopefully you guys are picking up that it means prioritize it carefully, and don't lift in the gym to the extent if your priority is running. You know, you got to be really careful. And so the way to do this in simple terms is to basically stick with the Dan John 10 rep rule. And that's when you're doing heavy weights and you're trying to build strength, 10 reps is really all you've got in the tank. So whether it's 2 sets of 5, 3 sets of 3, a set of 5, a set of 3, and a set of 2, that's a pyramid scheme. 2 sets of 5, 5 sets of 2, whatever. I know I'm just rambling. You've got 10 reps basically inside of you. And what that means is you've got the ability to do 10 reps at a heavy load. And that's pretty much the amount your body's going to be able to recover from without interfering with the next day's workout, and ensuring you're also going to get results from that training. And so revolving your heavy lifting and your strength training around those numbers, I think, is very helpful. So in other words, you might do you might have like 2 workouts, you might have a pull day and a push day, we'll say. And so on your pull day, you're going to do, 2 sets of 5 on the deadlift, and then 2 sets of 5 on the weighted chin up. And then maybe you'll do some supplemental stuff like kettlebell swings and something like that. And then on the push day, you might do 2 sets of 5 like weighted step ups, 2 sets of 5 on the dumbbell bench press or push up or a strict military press. And then you might do some supplemental abs or something like that. So those would be the types of workouts. Revolving it around that 10 rep number is the easiest way to ensure that you don't mess your marathon training up, while of course making sure you're not fasting and you're not cutting certain calories that you think are bad and things like that. Cool. And finally, the final question here is alternate exercises to the Turkish getup. I know a lot of times people have, whether it's knee pain, elbow pain, issues with coordination with the getup, which I've also got some articles on my website that can help with. You can cut the getup in half if you're having trouble with it and get 90% of the results. So the half getup is an amazing exercise. You basically just stop at what I call Orion's belt, which is when your knee is kind of on the ground. You can find that on my website as well. It's called the number one exercise nobody's doing or something like that. I'll link to it in the show notes. There's 3 parts to the article. But alternatives to the Turkish getup are also important. And so there's really 2 main ones. One of them, the first one, is carries. So doing one-sided carries, like I've talked about, and I can link in the show notes to episode 3738, which is the deep dive into kettlebells. I've also got one just recently where I talked about it. One-sided carries, things like overhead walking carries, rack carries, you're getting a lot of those same benefits as the getup in a slightly less strength-based, more dynamic mode, which is actually wonderful for running if you're in that crowd. But if you're really looking to get a lot of the benefits, the stability and some of the strength and some of the the general tension that you're going to be able to achieve with the getup, the best alternative exercise is called the Renegade Row. And the Renegade Row is essentially when you're in push-up position with two kettlebells or two dumbbells, and you're rowing one in and then the other. And the important thing on the Renegade Row is, let's say I'm doing it with kettlebells and I'm going to row my right arm. I want to drive weight into my left hand as I row my right arm. And then I want to drive my weight into my right arm as I row my left arm. And I want to make sure I'm really rowing those up and in, and I'm not shrugging. As I say, the shoulders are ear poison. So don't shrug. Don't let the upper body get too tense. Really row like you're trying to get your elbow in your back pocket. That's how you want to do the Renegade Row. And that's probably the best alternative to the Turkish getup when somebody's looking to replace it in terms of, you know, a simple core exercise they can do on a yoga mat. Carries also can be great. And then, you know, depending, some of the exercises I mentioned on the low back portion here, talking about like bird dogs and dead bugs and, you know, different things like that can also be similar. You know, depending on what the situation is, even the arm bar could be really cool. For some people that want to get some of that shoulder stability without, you know, most people, let me put it this way, most people though that can't do the get up or don't want to, it's because of the knees. And there are ways to do the get up where you can skip that and just go into a squat, but I don't really like them that much. But if it's a knee issue, then I would say, then just do the get up to the point where you would hit your knee on the ground. And then that's the end of your range of motion. So do like, whether it's a 30% get up, a 25% get up, a half get up, just don't go to the point where your knee is going to hit the ground. And so the best case scenario would be, you literally, and you might do it with no weight before you do it with weight, but you literally would go right to the point where your knee is going to hit the ground. And at that point, instead of touching the ground with your knee, just turn back the other direction and go back down. You could also practice with heavier and heavier and heavier loads going to the elbow, to the hand, and then back down. So you're actually just working on that real front 20% of the getup, but you're working on doing it with really, you know, some strong loads, which will help your get up a lot, because that's one of the hardest parts of the get up when you start getting really heavy once that knee, you know, resolves itself. You can also wear a knee pad. I've seen people do that, you know, wear a knee pad like you're going rollerblading during the get up, if that helps, depending on what's happening in the knee. But those are really the two best exercises, I would say, one-sided carries and Renegade Rows. Yeah, guys. All right. Well, hey, I really enjoyed this Q&A with you guys, as always. Thank you. And feel free to keep sending your questions. I don't do a lot of the Q&As on Instagram anymore, but if you want more answers like this, you know, I did so many in 2019, and I just noticed they're literally still all up on my Instagram in the highlights. There's like a million. And so you can check those out. And tune in next week, guys. We're getting back on the interview wagon here, which I'm so excited about. I took some weeks off here so I would be, you know, have more flexibility around getting this show out and things. But it's time to get back, and I've got some amazing people. Gosh, Austin, Texas, everyone lives here now. And so I'm just so fortunate to have just such great access to amazing spirits and people and souls that I will be absolutely bringing on the show very soon. So stay tuned. Thank you guys again for supporting all of my partners on this podcast, Traeger Grills, Cured Nutrition. I really love this stuff, Rise, so check that out. But thank you guys so much for using codes and clicking links and things like that. You know, it helps a ton in terms of getting these shows out and producing them at a high level. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And I'll see you soon, guys. Ciao. Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed today's show. For the show notes for today's episode, head on over to coachjoedi.com and click podcast from the menu. If you'd like to leave a review, which I would absolutely appreciate on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you found this show, please do so. These mean the world to me. They help me understand what my audience is gaining from these shows that I'm pouring my heart into, and ultimately helps us to reach more people, because these platforms like shows that get reviews. So it helps us out so much. If you're digging the shows, this would be so great if you could just leave a review. Also, I still give away $150 every 2 weeks to kettlebellkings.com to somebody that reviews my show. So if you leave a review, just screenshot it and email it to hey@coachjodi.com, and my team will enter you to win this $150 gift card so that you can outfit your home with a couple of kettlebells on me. Also, when you're in the show notes, you'll find links to any products that we discussed. For full transparency, some of these links do contain affiliate links. This helps me to fund these episodes, pay my staff, and ensure that I'm taking care of the people that take care of us. So I absolutely appreciate you clicking links and using codes. It helps keep this train on the tracks. All right, guys, until next week, thank you as always for listening. I really appreciate you guys subscribing and listening to this show every week. I really put a lot into them, so thank you so much. And you'll hear from me again next week. Take care.